Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers half year in review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Corey Richens is convicted. The jury came back, and now she's heading to prison for killing Eric. The trial is over, but the questions are not, as we're learning in our comment section. And I don't blame you. We got a lot of questions, too. And that's what we're going to do today on the program. We're going to go through Q&A live with you guys. I got some that I grabbed from your comments, so we're going to hit those. But if you have comments about this case, thoughts you want to share, drop them in live, and we will try to get to them as we work through this. We're going to talk today about the case here of Corey Richens. We're going to talk the latest on Nancy Guthrie. And we're also going to talk about the Kelsey Fitzsimmons case as well. So lots to get through. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, with us as always. Welcome, Robin. His book is out this week. It's Not All About Me. It's Big Book Week launch. And wherever you get your books, Amazon, whatever it is, be sure to go and put an order down.
And just tell a million of your friends, since my daughter's wedding is May. So
yes, tell your friend. It makes a great wedding gift, right there. So
The stories I could tell about
just,
that, yes.
Just give that to everyone. Yeah. But it's a great book. So please do check it out. All of his books are wonderful. If you like Robin, listen regularly and you can't get enough Robin in your life, there's plenty more books to get through. I'm listening to this one for a second time right now.
I never really equated the things I wrote years and years ago, or even not too far ago, because I worked in the world of counterintelligence, mm-hmm. behavioral analysis. But when we're looking at all, I'll throw it out the first time of the day, when you're looking at all the nutters in the world, oh my God, all of this is completely appropriate, because when you're strategizing life every day like normal people do with healthy people, mm-hmm. dealing with morons is so much easier.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is very interesting to look at it from those prisms. Your thoughts today, like I said, in the comment section. So we want to get into all of it. Let's start here on the Corey Richens case. First comment that I got, and we'll get to some of yours here in the live, so please do drop those in here. It starts out, she sat through the entire trial, heard every piece of evidence against her, and never once visibly broke. That's this listener's observation. Mm-hmm. Now she's convicted and going to prison for life. Robin, what happens to someone psychologically the moment that verdict hits? Does the mask finally come off, or does it hold?
You know, it's interesting. I don't think she was consciously putting a mask on. You know, when you're in front of the public view for so long, your natural leakage is going to just start coming out. Mm-hmm. And if you've really sat there, and we mentioned on the show yesterday, which I really thought was really interesting, when we analyzed her on the TV appearance she did, she only reacts, and when we're looking at her in the courtroom, if you want to go back and look at some scenes, all she ever reacted to ever was things that impacted her. Mm-hmm. It was never, so think about it, we've seen people on the stand before when dealing with family. Just think of Richard Allen, anytime his wife was brought up or family, he would just break down. You saw him visibly really shaken when you're talking about the impact of what's going on to people in their lives, friends, family, cohorts, but never ever her. Thinking about, her reactions when her lover is on the stand, her boyfriend, mm-hmm. nothing. Yeah. Kids didn't even come up. Just think about it. So now you fast forward that to what is she actually thinking and processing going to the prison, the only thing that's going through her mind is, what's happening to me? Do you really think she's thinking about and breaking down about what are going to happen to my kids? No, she's written them off. No, it's cruel to think of, and I'm not her, as the great Bob Motta will say, but from her compartmentalization, she's got all these different little compartments, but the biggest compartment is her. I think she's only thinking about the impact on her and what she is going to do to survive in that environment that she's going to be in. And as I think as Koff said the other day, I think she's going to be okay in that environment.
I mean, she has great manipulation skills, and that's a skill set that'll benefit her well in prison. Do you think it was a missed opportunity? And this would be an interesting one for Bob, because Bob would know you got to find ways of working certain things into a trial. And so I can make the blanket statement out here as a layperson saying, do you think it was a missed opportunity that they didn't lean more on the children in this case, that there wasn't more of and she's a mother, and don't take a mother away from her three children. She's already been taken away from them for so long. Don't let this continue. Something along those lines. There was none of that. I mean, and again, you have to find very specific ways of being able to work those sort of things into a trial. I mean, that could have been in closing statements easily without a whole lot of oversight, a whole lot of you can add this, you can't add that. So there are surface places where it could have been added in. Probably if you dug a little deeper, there could have been more ways. But it really seems like a very large missed opportunity on the part of Corey Richens and her entire defense team, that the kids really were very much like not even a second thought. They were like out in the ether. You wouldn't even know that she had kids if you weren't like paying close attention.
I think in their hindsight, it is the hugest missed opportunity for this and a few things I'm going to mention in a second. But at the same time, though, you know, the way Bob talks about, you know, defense attorney talks about how they work with the client about strategizing how to move forward. If it's not organic to her, mm-hmm. it's going to come across as completely fraudulent and manipulative to the jury. Yeah. And so it wouldn't have worked with her. But think about this. One of the things that I noted in that video of her on TV the other day, talking about her book and helping her kids work through the grief of losing her father, and she threw up her hands like this. And when they put their hands up, the thing I noticed was there was no wedding ring. Mm-hmm. And so think about the impact of this. Do our thought experiment. If she had been sitting like she was the entire time and she was wearing her wedding rings, what would that have, because remember, the jury came out, the lead jurist, juror number two, the foreman, said that they didn't want to convict her, but it was overwhelming to them because they felt mm-hmm. so bad. So if she had given any nonverbal, I mean, they wouldn't have to bring it up, nonverbal inkling of a connection to Eric or her children, an emotional response, or even talking about the kids in any way and just having her well up and feeling remorseful or any sense of that, this could have gone very differently. But she looked so cold, so non-responsive, and even just talking about it would have been an easy thing to bring up as one of the theories here of I liked, you know, the idea we came up with, a great defense could have been mm-hmm. that this was a mistake. I got him the drugs because, you know, he need him, he's addicted, and I regret it. I regret my affair because of the drug addiction. I mean, just think about how that plays, and then she wears the wedding ring. She talks about the kids. You got a whole new trial going on right here. But they couldn't do it. Why? Because she is a self-centered, broken brain moron.
it was her rigidness that I think kept them in the lane that it did.
Yeah.
If she hadn't been such a rigid human being, there was 1,000 other lanes you could have taken this down. And really hit an emotional spot and hit a pain point with other people. I don't know if pain point, but just an emotional point with other people that they could relate to. And I think you could have had a very different outcome. But they chose to go down the road of, Corey didn't do this, because Corey says she didn't do this, and we're just going to hold on and ride this out no matter what. And it's like, guys,
Tony.
Come on, you could have gone down this road so many different ways of, you know, she was struggling and she was trying to help him and she regrets buying this shit. Clearly she, but you couldn't, like, there were so many things they couldn't get away from, like the buying of the drugs and all that. At the end of the day, I know they tried to go, well, see, it wasn't fentanyl, it was this, or it wasn't Oxy. It doesn't fucking matter. I said it from the beginning, it doesn't matter. What matters is she said she wanted the Michael Jackson stuff. And she got something that killed her husband. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, I know. So think about the messaging that happens when you do this. So the trial and what the prosecution lays out, all the same. The cross is all exactly the same. But now she's wearing her wedding rings. Mm-hmm. And every time Eric comes up, she grabs her hand and she does a pacifying movement of playing with her
wedding rings. Yeah, so many things.
I mean, think about the impact. Think about all the nonverbal people out there doing things like we're doing now. I mean, just think of the impact that people would be speculating on had she done that one thing.
But would that have helped or hurt her, too, because of all the affair language that came into there? Because at the beginning, it felt like Nestor did try to land, maybe crash land the idea that that Corey was in this relationship, and they decided to work it through and figure it out. Don't judge their decisions if it was an open relationship, but they wanted to be together. And then all the evidence after that just shows the exact opposite of exactly what she just said. Would that have been more insincere if she's sitting there playing with the ring, or would it have been like, I don't know, because it was like a losing battle, no matter what. They set her up as something that she wasn't from the get-go,
right?
And then all the evidence continued to show that she's not what they're saying she is. Like, they should have leaned more into that she was making bad choices, that this is stupid, not kept trying to just... It's like they just continued to double down on Corey's stupidity and pretended that it wasn't what it was. And so, I think that's what really made the jury go, okay, this is
so all human bullshit. Beings are extremely forgiving of people that show vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And never throughout the trial did she demonstrate vulnerability through regret. And there's nonverbals you can show for regret of actions. And so what happens here is, and I'm completely on board with you. I mean, I don't, you know, the probability of changing the outcome, who knows, right? Because it's only hypothetical. But what it then does is, because as the great Bob Mata says, that, you know, this is all just a case on circumstantial evidence and plausible deniability, doubt, beyond reasonable doubt, right? So as the jury's there, and the jurors said they sounded pretty empathetic, pretty compassionate people.
Yeah.
And when you start putting doubt in there, and you have an individual like Corey, who's the one being charged, and it looks like she's regretful. It looks like she's had a come to Jesus moment of the bad choices she's made in her life. And you put out that different theory. It plays differently when you're dealing with beyond reasonable doubt, because then there's doubt about, so we kept arguing back and forth with Bob saying, we don't know Corey, but no, we think we know Corey because she's so consistent. She was consistent about what prosecution was saying. Cross didn't really do much about it. And she was consistent with that compartmentalization, looking at her on the witness stand, only reacting to things that impacted her. Mm-hmm. If she had been able to add, well, she's incapable, that's why this would never have happened. If she was capable of empathy towards another human being, and you could see that nonverbally, that would be an entirely new element that they'd have to take into account.
True.
So it'd another question. Fascinating.
Yeah. Here's another one. Eric's family spent 4 years watching this drag through the system. Now they have a verdict. Does closure actually exist for people in their position, or is that just something that we tell ourselves because it sounds right?
Yeah, closure is an interesting word, isn't it? Closure is in the eye of the beholders, like everything else is. I'm a believer in movement. And so this is an element for movement through pain, because it's just one more thing that'll help them move on, move through, you know, because everyone takes these things very differently and families take things differently. So you don't know what's going on in their minds, but having closure with this part of the trauma they're moving through is a very good thing. And the fact that their kids are with them, I think that's the next big challenge, you know, who wouldn't be facing with, all right, so now we have these beautiful babies, young children that now have to be explained why their mommy killed their father and is now in jail, maybe for the rest of her life. That's the next thing they, as a family, has to move through. So, and that's why I think this allowed them to now process this, move through this, so they can really focus on what's important. That's the next generation they have to save.
Yeah, at 1,000% sure. I can't even wrap my mind around that. I mean,
But what a great opportunity, though. So if they knew this was a chaotic marriage, and I mean, who hasn't been part of some family where you just wish you could rip the kids away and save them, right? Well, now's their chance. They've ripped the kids away from crazy, and now they have a chance. And you know, if we don't know what's going on in the family, but looking at Eric's dad and how vested he was in his son, the communication with his son, he's got another chance to do it again with his grandkids. I know Eric's sister is taking care of him, is what we understand. It's a great opportunity to put four ships back on course that might otherwise have been hitting rocks and destroyed.
You
know me, glass half full.
I hope. I mean, I really hope. You know, obviously they'll all handle it in their own ways, and they seem like they have some very dedicated, good people to raise them. And I hope the best. It's just, when it comes to the kids, they get so overlooked in cases where it's just kind of like, well, they're durable. they can see a lot and do, and the kids are. They are, but. I mean, it all comes out at some point, and they're going to have to process this in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And they're going to process it multiple times in life, because they're going to process it where they're at right now, maturity-wise, because they're children. They're going to process it again when they're a bit older, when they're in their teens. They're going to process it again in their 20s and 30s. They're going to process it again in their 40s and 50s. And it's probably going to look a little different each time as they try and square up the madness in their life. And the thing is, at the end of the day, is there ever really truly a way to process something like this correctly? I mean, I don't know if there is, because it's just madness. You're processing crazy and trying, and when you're processing something, you're trying to make sense of it. But I think more so you're trying to find, and this is probably the operative thing when you're trying to process something, is not necessarily making sense of it, but understanding your place in it and how to navigate the world going forward. Not just trying to make sense. You're never going to make sense. But okay, reality is what it is. How am I going to deal with reality on reality's terms going forward? Because we all know what happened. There's nothing anyone ever is going to say is going to go, oh, well, that's why she did it.
Yeah, I think it's good points. You know, you just keep processing your place in this entire event. Mm-hmm. And I think what we do, and it's why so many people are addicted to true crime and doing these things, is so that we can understand what makes people do what they do. So it's not the biggest challenge in all these situations is not putting a label on it, but trying to understand the behaviors, what created those behaviors. Like what, so I mean, we do this in our own families, not to the extent that most of us have to figure out what made someone close to us kill someone, but we also are trying to figure out what made them do something so stupid. The hardest part is to not judge the action, but to understand what led to that action. How was this person made? Because I think that's part of the process of healing and moving through is saying, all right, I don't want to be close to this person in my life because they're a grade A nutter, but at the same time, what made them? So one, we can recognize in others and help us avoid these people, and also so we can avoid it in ourselves. So it's just being able to pick apart objectively to be able to do that, to understand mm-hmm. the crazies, because one way we stay healthy is to avoid the nutters, or at least when we have to face them and work in around them, and if they're in our family, just gives us the ability, as I say, sit back and watch a show so that their crazy, nutty behavior doesn't affect us in that way, because we just don't get attached to it.
I was referencing it, I think, in conversation off the air this week, almost like being aware of the weather patterns of where you're at.
Yeah.
And being aware, is there a chance for storms today? Is it the season for storms? Is it storm season? Is there a watch or a warning or whatever it may be? I mean, and being aware of what is going on around you, things you can't control, because you're not going to reason away a tornado. You're not not going to reason away a tornado warning or a watch. It's just, it is. It is. Yeah. And if you're going to be in those environments and it, you can't control that where you live, these things are going to come and they're going to go, but you can prepare for them as best as you can. Mm-hmm. And you can be aware of them. Then you're not caught completely off guard when the tornado comes and rips your house away. Well, I had no idea it was coming. Well, the sirens were blaring and they were warning you for 5 days. That's on you.
Yeah.
You know, at some point. And I think that's part of it. Another question in here, Robin. Do you think Corey Richens actually believes she did something wrong? Or is she sitting in that cell right now telling herself a story where she is still the victim?
So really good question. This happens with all these cases. Do they think they're guilty of anything? Hard to imagine. She doesn't strike me as a Lori Vallow kind of complete mm-hmm. nut job.
Yeah, different, totally different type of person.
I don't think she's asking herself that question in reality, because then she'd have to face her actual actions and take ownership for who she is. And we don't like all the things that she was hearing in that courtroom. Actually, we can answer the question just by examining her behavior. Mm-hmm. So when was she most demonstrative non-verbally? Is when she's being accused of being the Black Widow, of being all these things. Because when someone is giving you that optic of your blind spots and you're confronted with it, and it's not what you want to be, it's not who you believe to be, and it's not congruent with the lies you've been telling yourselves and the falsehoods of who you are as a wife, as a mother, as a person in society, we recall these things. I don't think she's probably actively engaged that she did murder him. I think she, like you said, she's playing the victim that I was a victim of him trying to control me. So remember, she's all about controlling the narrative. And when someone tries to control your narrative away from you, they get resistant, they get angry because they think they're justified. This is my life. This is my control. And so me doing this is justified. So I think there's probably still rationalization going on, most likely.
Yeah, it's spooky how long people can rationalize shit.
Sometimes forever.
Forever. I mean, she'll probably go to her grave that way. Because I don't know, because you're not a rational person if you're able to process that and go, yeah, that's me. I mean, unless you're crazy. I mean, unless you're a psychopath. I mean, because any healthy brain's not going to look at all, unless you're able to admit fault, unless you're able to go, that was wrong. Totally wrong way of thinking, should not have done that. I don't know what was going through my mind, or maybe I do know what was going through my mind, but that was wrong. And I regret thinking that way. I regret doing that. I want to change. Obviously, I did what I did. I am sorry for it, but that never happens.
She had the chance, but didn't.
No.
She had the chance when she tried killing him the first time and failed. And and she doubled down and said, I got to do better at getting rid of my problems. My problem. Not get rid of him. My problem is him. All I got to do is get rid of him. She's a long way away from owning it. And now think about this, too. If she had truly been impacted by the actions that she had taken on her kids, first of all, she wouldn't have had the book Ghost written. And also, you would have seen an emotional reaction. I mean, that would have been... So the only people that I was thinking about when you were saying this, the only people typically can actually break through and make a difference is who? It's our kids. It's literally the last Fort Knox of emotion someone has, should be, is our children. And if her children couldn't break through that, it ain't happening. And the only people potentially in the future for her that could actually break through that and make her own what she did would be her children. We'll see if they actually, at any point in the history of their lives, have a desire to try to understand who that biological nightmare of their mother was.
I hope they don't. I hope they just wash her away and don't waste a damn more second of their time or their existence on it. Because there's no point to it. They would be used, they would be manipulated, all for her own well-being. That's the only way that she would play it. And it's another point. She will use that in prison as part of her victimhood. My children were ripped away from me. I don't even get to see them. They've been told all these stories about me. No, they're not told stories. They were introduced to the facts of what you did. And then they had a visceral reaction of not wanting to have anything to do with you. That's not, but they play it up as some sort of manipulation and somebody's doing this to them. It's like, no, you did it to yourself. And now you get to deal with the consequences.
Yeah.
kind of sucks. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube and Substack. We would love to get to them, and we'll continue the conversation on this off the air.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
In a courtroom in Utah, Corey Richin watched her story fall apart. Every day, another witness testified, another text message read on the record, another piece of the life she constructed crumbled under examination. The friend who says Corey told her it would be better if Eric were dead, or that she said that to the financial records showing the $250,000 HELOC Eric didn't know about, the boyfriend she was allegedly texting while her husband was still alive, the search history, the fentanyl. One by one, the bricks came loose. You can watch it happen in real time if you go back and look at the trial coverage. The controlled exterior giving way. The narrative she built becoming impossible to maintain. That's the unraveling. It looks different for everyone, but it always comes. The long con always ends, not because investigators are brilliant, they certainly weren't in this case, but because secrets require everyone to cooperate forever. And forever is a very long time. This is part five of The Perfect Wife, final episode in this series, and the one, this is for anyone who's ever watched a house of lies collapse. Who's seen the moment when someone's carefully constructed reality starts cracking at the seams? And I'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube and Substack. The links are in the descriptions right now. Hit subscribe while you're there. Denise Williams held it together for 18 years. That's longer than most marriages last. Longer than most people can keep any secret at all. For nearly two decades, she lived a completely normal life. Raised her daughter, went to work, paid her bills, got remarried, all while sitting on the knowledge of what she'd done. She collected $1.75 million in life insurance. She married the man who helped her kill her first husband. And every single day for 18 years, she woke up, went to sleep, and did it all again. She must have believed after a while that she'd actually gotten away with it. December 16th of 2000, Mike Williams wakes up early. It's his sixth wedding anniversary with Denise, his high school sweetheart, the love of his life. They have a daughter together, just a baby. They have plans to celebrate that evening. A nice dinner. Reconnecting. The kind of date night young parents dream about. But first, Mike is going duck hunting with his best friend, Brian Winchester. They've been friends since childhood. Best friends. A kind of friendship that survives adolescence and college and the transition into adulthood. When Mike and Denise got married, Brian was there. He's part of the fabric of their lives. Mike leaves before dawn. Denise kisses him goodbye. She'll see him that evening. Happy anniversary. Be safe. He never comes home. His boat is found abandoned on Lake Seminole. Search teams look for days. They drag the lake. They walk the shoreline. They find nothing. The official explanation? I don't know why the Alexa's responding to that, but it is. The official explanation, Mike drowned. His body was eaten by alligators. Lake Seminole had plenty of them. Case closed. Denise is devastated. Everyone says so. She plays the grieving widow perfectly. The shock, the tears, the slow acceptance. She has a baby to raise. She has to stay strong. She pushes to have Mike declared dead. Normally, you'd wait 5 years, but Denise petitions the court and gets it done in 6 months. She needs closure, she says. She needs to move on. She needs the insurance money to raise her daughter. 1.75 million. That's what Mike's life was worth on paper. And for 17 years, that's where the story ended. Tragic accident, terrible loss, young widow rebuilding her life. But Mike's mother, Cheryl, never accepted it. And I want you to understand what Cheryl Williams went through, because her story is the other side of this. The person who knows the truth and can't get anyone to believe it. She talked to alligator experts. She learned that alligators don't feed in December. It's too cold. Their metabolism slows. The official story about her son being eaten didn't make biological sense. She started asking questions, writing letters, putting up flyers, running newspaper ads year after year, asking for information about her son's disappearance. And year after year, people told her to move on. Your son drowned, they said. It's been investigated. There's nothing more to find. You're making this harder on yourself. You need to accept reality. For 17 years, Cheryl Williams was told she was crazy, paranoid, unable to let go, a grieving mother who'd lost touch with reality because she couldn't accept her son's death. But guess what? She was right the whole time. Here's what actually happened on December 16th, 2000. Denise Williams and Brian Winchester had been having an affair before Mike died. Well, Mike was building a life with Denise while he was celebrating anniversaries and raising a baby. His wife and his best friend were effing behind his back. They planned the murder together. The original plan was to make it look like a drowning, push Mike out of the boat, hold him under, let the lake do the rest. An accident, a tragedy, nothing anyone could prove. But Mike was strong. When Brian tried to drown him, Mike fought back. He struggled. He tried to get out of his waders and swim, so Brian shot him in the face. He dragged Mike's body to the shore, put it in his truck, drove to a boat landing near Car Lake, less than an hour from where Cheryl Williams would spend the next 17 years looking for answers, and buried him. Then he went home, cleaned up, and went about his life. And Denise collected the insurance. 5 years later, long enough to avoid suspicion, Brian Winchester married Denise Williams, his best friend's widow, his partner in murder. I mean, think about what that means. Think about the daily reality of that life. You killed your best friend. You buried him in the woods. You married his wife. And now you're raising his daughter together, eating dinner at the same table, celebrating holidays, building a life on top of a grave with a straight face, performing normalcy to everyone else around you. That takes a special type of person, doesn't it? And boy, were these two peas in a pod. Mike's daughter grew up calling her father's killer dad. She had no idea. How could she? She was a baby when it happened. For 10 years, Brian and Denise lived as husband and wife. They built a home. They went to church. They attended neighborhood barbecues and school events and all the ordinary moments that make up an ordinary life. And underneath it all, underneath every single day, was the knowledge of what they'd done. The long con requires you to carry that weight forever. You can never slip. You can never tell anyone. You can never have too much to drink and say something you shouldn't. You can never fight with your spouse and threaten to expose them. You can never crack. For 17 years, Denise Williams didn't crack. But Brian Winchester did. In 2016, Denise filed for divorce. The marriage had been struggling. They'd grown apart. She wanted out. And Brian panicked. Think about what happens when you split up with someone who knows you murdered her first husband. With the thing that bound you together, the secret, the crime, the shared guilt, becomes something they might use against you. What happens in a custody battle when one party knows the other helped commit murder? What happens when the divorce gets ugly? when lawyers start digging, when everything you've hidden for 17 years becomes leverage in a negotiation. Brian couldn't handle it. And on August 5th of 2016, he kidnapped Denise at gunpoint, forced her into a car. He wasn't trying to kill her, at least that's what he'd later claim. He was terrified, desperate, trying to figure out a way forward that didn't end with him in prison. It didn't work. He was arrested for kidnapping. And now Brian Winchester was facing 20 years. Investigators were taking a fresh look at a case that had been cold for almost two decades. Mike Williams' name was in the news again. The math became simple. His survival mattered more than their secret. And Brian confessed to everything. He led investigators to Mike Williams' body. They found him at Carr Lake, exactly where Brian said he'd be, less than an hour from where Cheryl Williams had been searching for 17 years. Denise Williams was arrested in May of 2018. At trial, Brian testified against her immunity from murder charges in exchange for his cooperation. He described the planning, the affair, the insurance policies. He's explained that one of Mike's policies was about to lapse, that they had to act when they did, or they'd lose the money. Our window of opportunity was closing, he said. The prosecutor's summary was simple. Sex, lies, and deceit. The jury convicted Denise in less than a day. Cheryl Williams sat in that courtroom and watched 17 years of being told she was crazy, 17 years of fighting for an investigation that everyone said was unnecessary. Her son had been murdered by his wife and his best friend. They'd buried him in the woods and built a life on his insurance money, and they'd gotten away with it for almost two decades, but not forever. That's the thing about secrets. They require everyone to cooperate indefinitely. The accomplice has to stay loyal. The witnesses have to stay quiet. The loose ends have to stay tied. Brian Winchester loved Denise enough to kill for her. Loved her enough to bury his best friend in the woods and lie about it for 17 years. Loved her enough to marry her and raise Mike's daughter as his own. But when the choice came down to her freedom or his, he chose himself. That's how these things always end, not with brilliant detective work or dramatic confessions born of guilt, just simple human self-preservation. My survival matters more than our secret. Corey Richens just watched that equation play out in her own case. People talking, the friend who testified about what Corey said, the witness coming forward with pieces of the puzzle, the texts and records, and all the evidence that accumulates when you live a double life. Every long con has a witness. People who saw something, who heard something, who noticed something off, and every one of those people is a potential crack in the foundation. The silence holds until it doesn't, and then everyone talks at once. Mike Williams is buried property now, with his real name on the headstone. His mother can visit his grave. His daughter knows the truth about what happened to her father and who raised her in his place. It took 17 years, but the long con came undone. They always do. Your thoughts in the comment section. On Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. We'll continue our conversation there. I look forward to it. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, wherever it may be. Get on your phone, search our podcast, and hit subscribe. Do it right now. So you got us in the car when you get out there later. If you've not already done it, if you're listening to us on the podcast platform, hit subscribe. We do appreciate that. All right. We'll continue our conversation there in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind. Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.